DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon and Gabriel Borrowed.
I don't think we've ever started a show jumping out of our chairs. Welcome to Spectrum. This is Connor Dillon.
And I am Gabriel Borrowed.
And Gabe, what song was that?
That's Eaten. That song, the name of the song is Eaten.
Eaten as in, like, consumed.
Eaten. Eaten. By the band Bloodbath.
Eaten by Bloodbath.
Yeah, the lyrics, if you didn't get it, that was...
Just give us the first couple lyrics.
I've had one desire since I was born, to see my body ripped and torn, to see my flesh devoured before my eyes. I'm here for you, I volunteer as a human sacrifice.
Well, that's weird, because I've had one desire since I was born. It was to be able to fly.
To win the Masters golf tournament.
Not to be... To have my flesh consumed. So it's a very different take on life
here. It goes on. Carve me up, slice me apart, suck my guts, lick my heart, chop me up like I want to be hurt, drink my marrow and blood for dessert.
This is a person indicating a desire to be cannibalized.
Yes. Correct.
Consumed by another
person.
That
is his one desire on earth.
Well,
before we get
not my kind of music.
Yeah, well, hold on. What did you feel when you heard that?
Because the lyrics were so... let's say, consumed by the music itself. I don't listen to that. I would never listen to that kind of music in my free time. I don't even know what to call it. But
death metal.
Gave me energy. I wanted to jump out of my chair and kind of headbang, even though I don't really headbang.
Interesting. But you're not a fan then,
of
death metal.
No rock, heavy, hard rock. Hard rock? Is that hard rock? I don't even know. No festivals. I know the Wacken Festival here in Germany.
It's coming up, actually.
Coming up soon. Huge festival for that kind of music. I know people who go there.
Okay, hold on. But what do you think about those people? People who are fans of death metal. Do you think they're violent, possibly, or...?
That's, yeah, okay. So how would I immediately classify them? Very different style of dress. Typically, darker clothing. Like, you see a lot of black. It seems like. I kind of vaguely associate it with motorcycle riding. I don't know if that's correct.
Yeah.
But people who are into death rock might also drive a motorcycle.
Do you think they're inherently violent as people?
I would be more intimidated by that person. Yeah. Like if there's person A who listens to death metal and person B who listens to classical music, I would be more physically intimidated by the death metal listener. That's a prejudice of mine.
Let me ask the question a bit differently. What do you think, what kind of emotions do you think goes through these people's heads, the fans of this kind of music, when they listen to it? Is it more negative stuff, or what do you think?
I mean, now I have an image of like a mosh pit, people jumping around, headbanging, bouncing against each other, maybe getting angry, punching each other. Aggression, positive aggression, if that makes sense. Or I don't know if positive is the word, but it's like allowing that aggression to kind of flow out of your body in a way that maybe is constructive. I don't know.
That is exactly pretty much what researchers, this is some solid science, at Macquarie University in Sydney have found out. They've been studying this for 12 years, what music does to
12
us.
12 years.
Yeah. And this particular study that has just been published in the Royal Society journal Open Science says that death metal inspires joy.
Joy.
Empowerment, transcendence, and even peace in the people who like it. As opposed to, you know, a common theory or, I don't know, even criticism that this kind of music, I don't know, makes us violent.
So I guess I did use an incorrect word there, saying aggression. It's not so much aggression as empowerment.
Yeah. Joy.
Joy.
Peace.
I mean, if I'm listening to that, do I feel joy?
Empowerment is the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and to get a sense of this, I spoke with the lead author. His name is Bill Thompson at Macquarie University. And we couldn't get on the phone with him because of the 12-hour time difference. It's really hard to do any interviews with anyone from that part of the world because it's just, what, am I going to wake up at 4 a.m. and talk to the guy? No. He responded via email. He sent voice recordings of his answers. And the first question that I asked him was like, okay, people who listen to this music literally feel joy? How's that possible?
The fans of death metal, unlike non-fans, are experiencing a range of very positive emotions. And the second notable finding is that the violence that's depicted in death metal songs is not leading to any kind of troubling desensitization among the fans.
So I find that really interesting that I had never heard this song before, and I can't say that I've heard many songs in my life about wanting to be cannibalized.
Yeah.
That's probably the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I really would have assumed until that researcher said that there would have been desensitization, that if you listen to the stuff all day, every day, on repeat in your car, that you would have stopped noticing the violent imagery or you would have, it wouldn't have affected you as much, but he's saying it does.
Isn't that unbelievable how they tested this? Okay, so they took death metal fans, 32 of them, and non-death metal fans, people who don't like this music, 48 of them, and showed them two different images, one to each eye. And one of those images had something really violent going on,
mm-hmm.
some kind of blood or some violence. The science is that if you are desensitized to violence, you won't notice the violent image more than the non-violent image.
Mm-hmm.
And among the death metal fans, that was not the case at all.
They were still noticing it
based
at
on
a higher
scientific
rate. Yeah.
evidence. They were equally sensitive to violence as the non-death metal fans, people who do not listen to this music.
And then in a finding that, in my view, kind of reflects a lot of debates regarding violent video games, it turns out that listening to this music does not make you more violent.
Yeah, especially with music. He was saying that it does the contrary, actually.
With angry music, it's the same thing. If somebody's trying to work through some angry feelings, sometimes it helps them to not feel so alone, to listen to music that represents their feelings of anger or their difficult feelings. At the same time, they're able to extract from the music some positive qualities, such as empowerment and even joy and energy. So people are using music to manage their emotions. They're using it for entertainment. They're using it to revive their energy. They're using it as a diversion, so a sort of distraction. They're using it as a way of discharging negative feelings. They're using it to change their emotions and also as a source of comfort. Music can be used in many ways to manage one's emotions, and listening to aggressive music is no exception.
Okay, so I guess a reminder to all of us, to all of our listeners out there, don't judge a music listener by his or her music, whether it's rap or hard rock, death metal, country, blues, or something in between that you don't necessarily agree with.
Yep.
It doesn't mean they're a bad person.
Many thanks there to Bill Thompson, Professor Bill Thompson of the Psychology Department at Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia.
Okay, well, we are going to leave cannibalism behind and that pretty intense song. We're going to come back to it later, by the way.
Yeah, no more bloodbath for now.
No more bloodbath for now. But, you know, we've been asking you, we ask you just about every week to please write in if you have questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to talk to us about. We are spectrum@dw.com, and people do write in, and we promise you that we will respond. And today we're going to address one of those emails. Gabe, I believe you have it printed in front of you.
I've got it. Yeah, this came a couple of weeks back from Graham Suthers.
Out of Australia.
He is in Sydney, and he is the head of genetics at Sonic Healthcare, mm-hmm. Australia. That is a serious company, and he is the head of genetics there. So,
yeah, and this was in response to our cancer. I believe the title of our show, at least online, was called "Only You Can Prevent Cancer." It was about some of the things that you could do yourself to reduce the risk of cancer in the future.
Dr. Suthers was concerned that after listening to this, to our show, one might have ended up with a misunderstanding of cancer and cancer risk. And he writes that cancer is due to the accumulation of errors. I'm quoting him here. Accumulation of errors in the genetic code in the cells of the body. If you live long enough, you will get cancer. You have a 100% chance of getting cancer unless, you know, you die of something else. And we didn't communicate that clearly. I can't remember if that was the case, but...
I don't believe we focused on extreme old age and genetics at that point. What a large focus of that show was on the heritability of certain kinds of cancers. In fact, we ended that way, speaking to an expert from Cologne on which cancers can be inherited more than others.
And then there was also Dr. Munz from Heidelberg, who was saying that there are things that you can do to decrease or reduce the risk of getting cancer, and that's what we were getting at.
Yeah, she had the good news in that show. She said that, yes, cancer rates are going to go up in the coming decades,
but
40% of cancer cases can be prevented.
Yeah, by not smoking, by not drinking, by exercising.
So why don't we go to a clip? We ended the show differently than we tend to end our shows. And that was also responded to in the email. If we could go ahead and hear that clip now. Now, as many of our listeners know, a lot of times we really enjoy ending our show with a song as a way of kind of encapsulating the stuff that we've learned on our journey throughout the show. With cancer, we decided against that. It's a topic that...
You can't sing about it.
It's just too... Too sad. No, seriously. It is just incredibly sad. We don't want to sing about it. In fact, I don't know if there are any songs out there about cancer at all. But I guess that's another way of saying, or to frame it positively, it makes us all the more thankful for the researchers out there. And I would still like to say there that I've thought about composing a cancer song. I've really tried to figure out a way to make that work. I still kind of stand by not creating one. Maybe there would have been something trials.
We talked to a lot of people that week about whether we should do that. And everyone that we talked to said, don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Do not sing a song generally about something so sad.
So again, he ended it.
Yeah, Graham Suthers ended his email saying that he was particularly concerned that you closed the session on a grim note. He says he agrees that cancer is a serious matter, but it can also draw the best out of people.
Yeah, and before we go any further, Graham Suthers, thank you for writing us. And to all our listeners out there, please send us an email if you have anything to say. And we're now going to pick up on where Graham left off, bring out the best in us. Is that how he put it?
He said he agrees that cancer is serious, but it can also draw the best out of people. And we are joined in studio now by Yulia Vergin.
Hi.
Our DW colleague. And Yulia, you have a story, a cancer story that I believe brought out the best in a woman.
Yeah, it's not my personal story, but I talked to a woman and she's basically saying the cancer changed my life for the better.
So she got cancer.
She got cancer.
German woman?
A German woman. She's now in her 50s, and 20 years ago she was diagnosed with cancer, and the doctor said to her, get your affairs in order because you're not going to live very long.
This was 20 years ago?
Yeah.
And you met with her recently, or you got in contact with her
recently?
Yeah,
I got in contact with her a few weeks ago, and we had quite a long chat. And actually, I know her personally, but I didn't know her story, so that was news to me as well. And she said, I didn't get cancer for nothing. So it's not that only that she's saying the cancer changed my life for the better. It was kind of a wake-up call. And but also she's pretty convinced that her mental state, her negative attitude towards life, was kind of the breeding ground for that cancer. That's what she is pretty convinced.
So that we were just talking about lifestyles. So that maybe her negative mental state, maybe it led to a lifestyle that wasn't very healthy?
It's not only lifestyle. I think what she meant was how she perceived herself. Mm-hmm. She told me that she had a poor sense of self-worth. She was pessimistic. She was always on the edge of being depressed. That's how she described it. And of course, that probably leads to and quite an unhealthy lifestyle. So she became a smoker, and she didn't think that much about healthy food or exercising enough. Yeah, but she, after years of being in a shock, she started a therapy, and she told me she learned a lot about herself and about the origins of her pessimistic views. So about her childhood, and I don't want to go into details, but basically she got to know herself pretty well. And the key moment or the key thought she had then was, if I had something to do with getting this cancer, I can maybe change that
okay,
as well.
So, wow. So talk about...
Turn it around.
Talk about cancer drawing the best out of people. It seems like cancer, without cancer, this woman would be much more unhappy than she is now.
She's saying, yeah, yeah. She's saying she's definitely leading the better life now. And cancer, or yeah, the very, very serious illness helped her.
Yeah, so I'm struggling with how to deal with what you said. It sounds like if you survive cancer, this can lead to a positive psychological benefit. You have a different view on life, and mm-hmm. it can change your life for the positive. Now, of course, it's sort of a remedy without any medicine, because nobody is prescribing cancer so that you feel happier. But it's still interesting to find out that you can, yeah, you can experience that.
Yeah, and that's quite common, actually. So the Patricia, that was the woman I talked to, she's not an isolated case, because Christian Albus said that it is quite common. People who suffered a very bad illness, doesn't have to be cancer, can be anything that threatens your life, and survive it, they, of course, prioritize in a different way after that. They, of course, feel stronger because they actually survived mm-hmm. something that was really, really serious. So, yeah, what Patricia did, what she told me is that she is perceiving life, her children's lives in a very different way now. Life is just more intense for her, I think. Hmm. That's where.
Okay, so yeah.
Interesting, Connor, that you called it a remedy. Did you get a sense from Patricia, Yulia, of how she did this? Where she got the strength from?
Yeah, she told me because of the therapy. So she was also married, but her husband couldn't help her. She was in such a shock that she wouldn't even notice people who were reaching out their hands to help her.
So it was like a catatonic depression then? Or...
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, going to a therapist, someone who has enough distance to... not get affected by your, yeah, grief and your anger and whatever, but it also provides this kind of room where you can just be with all your feelings, all your emotions, whether they are good, bad, whatever. That was a very helpful experience for her. And yeah, she did that for years. So it was not just... a short period of time where she actually got help. It was, yeah, she did that for years. And it was a slow process. But yeah.
Okay, well, Yulia Fagin, thank you for, well, I guess, introducing me certainly to the idea of psycho-oncology. And
thanks for sharing the story of Patricia.
Yeah, as our listeners, an unexpected benefit of surviving cancer.
Thank you.
And welcome to the studio, Fabian Schmidt.
Hey, Fabian.
Hi, Connor and Gabe.
So Fabian, you are here today to talk about an object that you found, what, on the ground?
Yeah, it was on the ground, on the grass, on the way to work, actually. The other day, it was just the beginning of the week, and I walked to work, and there was a dead bird there at the side of the street, and was already pretty much a skeleton of a bird. There wasn't much left on it. A couple of feathers.
I came in the office, and there was a bird foot on the windowsill. And I was just wondering what was going on there.
Yeah, and that's on. So
yeah, it had a point, it was red.
So you took that bird's foot.
Yeah, I and you brought it in. The, I you, ripped you brought out the leg and took
you,
it.
You
into
literally
the
ripped the leg out and brought it.
Did yes, you have? I did noticed, you have gloves? Did noticed, you have gloves?
No, I noticed that the that the bird was there and that it was a ringed bird. So it had a ring. And my first idea
meaning some
was
sort of identification tag.
ID tag, a ring.
That was green.
It was, it was a green one, but I didn't know yet what all that meant. So I just knew that there was a ring on it, and I didn't know what kind of bird it was. The feathers were white, so I was actually thinking it was a seabird, but it was not a seabird, but more about that later.
The foot was distinctly red, and right?
You have it with
no,
you,
no, the foot
right?
was just a regular foot. The first idea was that, you know, maybe this is some question of citizen science and one should try to take the ring and report it to whoever would have put the ring on it. And that was my idea. And since I didn't want to touch a dead bird, I always have, because I have dogs, as I've reported in the show before, I always have little plastic bags with me. So I took one of these...
The poo bags.
Poo bags from the dog and... used it to basically rip out the part of the foot that held the ring.
Were you alone, or were people watching you?
No, I was pretty much alone. Okay. There were not many people.
I would have felt
but
their
I just,
eyes
I
on me.
Basically, just held the bird down with a shoe, and then just used the bag to take the foot along.
Did the leg just pop right out, or did you have to?
Yes, it was. It was pretty much already decomposed. Yeah.
Can you bring the foot out? You have the foot with you?
No, I don't have the foot with me, but I actually have... I had to take the ring off somehow to read it. I washed it, and it is here in my wallet.
Okay.
So...
Go ahead and slide that across the table, if you will.
Here it is.
So made of plastic, and the number...
The inner part is actually aluminum.
Yes, and green plastic on the outside, and it says BE18... and then the number is 6019013, and then there's a logo. It looks to me like a dancing person, but I'm not sure if that...
I couldn't figure it out.
Here you go, Gabe.
Yep, toss it over. Hey, Fabian, who did you call up to...
Where do you
to
start?
Get, to get more
where
precise
you, yeah,
information
where
on
do you
what
start?
This means.
Yeah, basically the first thing was to take the ring off from the foot. And at the office, because we have lots of plants at the office, I have some... pruning scissors, and so I used those to cut the foot because it was impossible to take the ring off otherwise. And so I washed the ring and tossed the rest into the garbage. And then I called the NABU. It's basically the German Environmental and Animal Protection Agency, so to say. And they have a department for ornithologists. And so I talked to some man there, and he basically asked me what the ring looks like. And what he told me is that if the ring is completely intact, like this one is, it doesn't have a closing part.
Like
it's basically a clamp. It's a completely intact round ring with no way of opening
this
it.
This is never
like
coming
that.
Off unless someone rips
yes.
the leg out
that
and
would
cuts
mean,
the
or uses
that,
pruning
that would
scissors.
Mean that the bird who got the ring was given the ring when he was very young, and that basically then the foot grew into the ring, so the ring wouldn't be falling off. And that means it's a pigeon or a dove.
Only those birds have that kind of ring clamped to their legs.
Let's put it this way. If a bird is ringed in a scientific or environmental study, then the rings will be applied to the foot when they're already adults. And that's why there is usually some kind of mechanism to close the ring. And if the ring doesn't have this mechanism, but it's basically one complete piece, only one piece, then it means that these rings were applied to the bird when they were very young.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so then the foot grew in the meantime and the ring couldn't fall off. That means that they were birds that were bred for some purpose. In this case, the color coding clearly indicated a pigeon. Mm. So they gave me the telephone number of the German Male Pigeon Breeders Association, or I'm not sure what you mm-hmm. would call that. And so I called them. They said, yes, green is for the year 2018. BE stands for Belgium. And
so
they were happy
to... So a pigeon from Belgium.
What about 601-9013? That was the particular pigeon?
That's a pigeon number. So they took down the number and they reported it back to the organization
in
Belgium.
Two questions here, Fabian. Why? Why would you put this on a pigeon? To track,
so you could,
track the migration?
Could identify your pigeon, because if you're a pigeon breeder, you use pigeons to transport messages or just to for competition or other purposes. You
so it'd be like branding a cow, I guess.
Yeah, it's the same thing. But basically with pigeons, the point is that you transfer them to another place and then they have to find their way home, which is the whole way that male pigeons function. So, and then you want to know which pigeon is which. Mm. So, yeah, you can determine a bred and trained pigeon, so to say, from a wild or just an urban pigeon that's just a pigeon.
Second question. This is 601-9013. So there are 6 million, at least 6 million pigeons then?
No, that doesn't mean anything. It's just a coding. It's just a coding number okay. that is probably that long because there's so many around, but... you wouldn't be able to judge from the number just that, but you know, at least the breeder will be able to identify his bird.
All right.
Okay, so some citizen science in the most unexpected way.
Fabian Schmidt, you never know what this guy is going to bring into the studio.
It
you know?
Might just be avian flu.
Probably.
Fabian, thank yes. you very much.
Thank you okay. so much, Fabian.
Bye.
I've had one desire since I was born, to see my body ripped and torn, to see my flesh devoured before my eyes. I'm here for you, I volunteer as a human sacrifice. Carve me up, slice me apart. Suck my guts and lick my heart. Chop me up, I like to be hurt. Drink my marrow and blood for dessert. Eaten my one desire, my only wish to be eaten. The longer I live, the more I'm dying to feel the pain. Eaten. I would do anything to be eaten.
That was really beautiful.
Thank you. Did it make you feel empowered? More so
no,
than,
because
than
it
the
wasn't,
bloodbath
it wasn't death metal.
Rendition?
But as we learned in this show, music is kind of therapeutic. So it did something
it
for
me. It doesn't matter what type of music
yeah.
it is, it does something for you. I hope I did something for you.
Yeah.
My rendition.
Well, we would like to thank all of our listeners out there for tuning in to this broadcast. I hope that yeah. you have a more open mind toward other kinds of music and what they do for the people listening to them.
Also, that Patricia's story of drawing the best out of cancer.
Yeah. And the role that psycho-oncology can play. And finally, through the help of our colleague Fabian Schmidt, what to do if you see a dead bird with a band around its leg. So thank you again to all of our listeners out there. Thank you to our studio technician, Jürgen
Kuhn.
And
putting up with us this week.
Again, if you have...
Thanks to Bill Thompson. Definitely a shout-out to Macquarie
yeah,
University
to Bill
in
Thompson.
Sydney.
And to Graham, again, in Australia, for writing in. Please,
absolutely.
Again, to
thank
all of you,
Dr.
out there.
Southers.
Spectrum@dw.com. We are also online on Twitter. @DW_SciTech, and Facebook, DW Science. With that in mind, get in touch or not if you don't have time or don't want to, and please have a wonderful week ahead.
Have a wonderful week ahead, guys. What a weird sounding chord.